Hello, this is Alonzo Bowden. Welcome to episode 257 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? As always, I thank you for listening. And let's talk a little about paying attention going in. Don't pay too much attention. I have a friend who, I wouldn't say she's a news junkie, but she definitely stays up on the news, and she's one of the people who is driven absolutely crazy by Trump. And this is a real thing, right? We have a lot of people where it really gets to them. Now, me, he annoys the hell out of me. I think he's ridiculous, worst president ever, blah, blah, blah. But this isn't about, this is people who really, I mean, it drives them crazy. And I told her she's got to take a break from the news. We live in a time where the insanity has reached a point you can't watch the news. I don't even think you can watch the news every day. I really don't. You got to take a break. Even I do. And listen, weekends, I'm off. I spent this past weekend testing motorcycles with my friend Mike Seat from Cafe Racer magazine, which was a blast, by the way. But you got to give yourself a break. It is too much bad news. You know, I do a podcast called Fear Not with Barry Glassner, who's a brilliant sociologist who talks about fear and the marketing of fear, and he's into debunking fears. And one of his personal things is the evening news, right? You know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. And if you watch the evening news every night, you'll be terrified because there's always somebody getting shot or robbed or you know, some other violent act or horrible traffic accident that you can't drive anywhere. You can't, you know, it's always some terrible news. And they tease you with it. They tease you with the terrible news. Coming up after the next commercial, how to get killed buying groceries. We've seen it. So give yourself a break. Listen, some people have to follow this for a living. I know people who work in news or like the writers on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which hilarious show on NPR, which I happen to be a panelist. They have to follow the news all the time. If you don't give yourself a break. It's too much. I mean, all right, let's just get into it. Trump is, he's lost it. He never had it. Let's be honest. He never had it. But no, he's becoming more unhinged every day. So my last podcast, I talked about, you know, they have to start the impeachment, and they have. The Democrats have started the impeachment inquiry over the attempted deal with the Ukraine. The president attempting to get a foreign government to investigate a U.S. citizen who's running for president borders on treason. I mean, it's an impeachable offense, and other things are coming out. The money, you know, they always say with crime, follow the money. So now we're looking at a lot of the money that people have been talking about, his resorts and hotels used as a way to launder money. Ukraine being one of the foreign governments that booked a bunch of rooms that they didn't use. They just booked a bunch of rooms at a Trump hotel, and they book events at Trump resorts. And it's just a way to give him money. You know, the money goes into that. It's run by his kids, blah, blah, blah. And more of this is coming out in the impeachment inquiry. Things are so bad. The stuff, even Fox News is slowly turning on him. And this blew my mind. Even Tucker Carlson, yeah, full of shit, Tucker Carlson, I'll lie about anything, Tucker Carlson. Even he said that he doesn't think he can spin this story. Now, in saying that, he's basically admitting, I've tried. I'm trying to lie about this one. I'm trying to come up with a way to make this look good, but I can't. I'm a liar. I'm a professional liar. I've been lying for Trump from day one. Even I can't come up with a lie. Of course, Hannity can, but we're not talking about Hannity. But yeah, there are more and more Fox News people speaking out against Trump on this one. And, you know, what's his name? Shepard. He's the one Trump never liked because he's always been somewhat reasonable. Isn't that funny? Like, oh, he's a reasonable reporter. Trump can't stand him. Anyway, so, you know, there are Trump techniques, right? So we've had the attack of the whistleblower. The whistleblower is the one who's un-American, and he wants some congressman, the congressman who read part of the transcript, to be arrested for treason, and he's a spy. And you know what used to do with spies? This is all Trump bullshit. So now, and another one of Trump's techniques, right, is to stir up something else. Like if we stir up over here, they won't keep looking at this. So now he's got the Turkey Syria thing going on. So he is pulling the troops out of Syria that have been assisting and protecting and helping the Kurds. The Kurds fight ISIS. The Turkey wants to attack the Kurds. So if we're not there in northern Syria to help the Kurds, the Turkey can attack the Kurds, right? Which could be bad for us because it could allow ISIS to grow. And even some Republican senators, even, you know, McConnell has said this is a bad idea. Lindsey Graham, who really wants to perform unnatural acts on Donald Trump or perhaps his son. Maybe he likes him young. I don't know. Is that a horrible thing to say? I don't give a shit. Lindsey Graham's a piece of shit, but even he is against this. Okay. The only one who has spoken out in favor of it is Rand Paul with the get America out of every other country idea. But this has nothing to do with what Trump's idea is. Trump's trying to deflect, get away. And this tweet, I mean, the man's unhinged. Okay. So he tweeted, quote, as I have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate it, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey. I've done before. That was in parentheses. They must, with Europe and others, watch out, blah, blah. Okay, the only economies he's obliterated were businesses that he owned. Atlantic City, anyone? But who writes in my great and unmatched wisdom other than the wizard in The Wizard of Oz? Now, the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, I think he was the great and unmatched wizard, if I remember correctly. There was something great and unmatched in. He actually wrote in my great and unmatched wisdom. He unhinged. He's the crazy old man. He should, and this is the president of the United States. This is a guy who should be like ranting and raving from a seniors community. Like he should be, you know, in some senior community on the porch and just start, you know, yelling or, you know what I mean? Or just some guy yelling at the curtains or something. This is a president of the United States. This is our face to the world. How does Europe handle this? How does any other country, other than Russia and Putin, who's laughing his ass off, how do you handle when the President of the United States tweets, in my great and unmatched wisdom? Unreal. Unhinged. Impeachment. Impeachment's got to happen. It's got to happen. And I hope they keep their eyes on it and don't be, yes, stay on top of the troops and the troop movement. And listen, I feel for the troops. It's tough what they have to do all around the world. The United States is the world's police force, good, bad, or indifferent. We help those who cannot help themselves. We help the weak. It's expensive. It costs human lives. It costs American lives. There are troops that make the ultimate sacrifice. And even the ones who don't, I've been to some of these places. You have no idea what it's like to be that far from home in a completely different culture. Many of these countries don't even allow alcohol, so they can't have a beer at the end of their work day or at the end of their work week or whatever. So, you know, the troops, they're victims of circumstance. But this is the job. This is the job. So we have to do it. We have to protect those who can't protect themselves. And it also protects our interests, right? For us to be helping the Kurds who are keeping an eye on ISIS. Listen, this stuff is very complicated, and there's a lot of interests that get crossed. Helping this one hurts that one, and so on and so forth. And you have to understand a culture completely different than ours. Middle Eastern culture completely different than ours. Middle Eastern religious culture, Islam, completely different from our Christian culture. Difficult to understand, difficult to respect, a lot of fine lines to be walked. We don't need some idiot talking about in my great and unmatched wisdom making some ridiculous threat against an ally. It's why you have to take a break from the news. Moving on, because I'm not gonna, you know, someone tried to bait me into a thing at a comedy show with a Trump supporter was there, some singer who had on a Trump dress, and she was at the comedy show, and ooh, you shouldn't talk to her. I don't even waste my time. There ain't no way I'm sitting around arguing with a Trump supporter. Let them work on his great and unmatched wisdom. I'm not qualified. Amber Geiger, the police woman who shot Botham Jean, forgive my pronunciation. She, you know the story. She went into his apartment and shot him dead. She was found guilty, which surprised so many people. And that's saying a lot, the fact that we were surprised that a white policewoman was found guilty after shooting a black man in his own home. But this is the world we live in. That's a surprising verdict. She was only sentenced to 10 years. So she probably, you know, I don't know what happens. They serve half of that or something. The victim's brother gave her a hug in forgiveness, and that is on him. And I believe he has every right to do that. It's his family. It's his brother. However he felt after listening to testimony at the trial, or maybe it's religion or whatever, that's okay. He has a right to do that. The judge gave her a hug. That's a problem. I've never heard of a judge giving a hug to a convicted murderer that they're sending to prison. That's fucking mind-blowing. What is that saying? I don't even know. Does that mean it's okay? We feel bad for you? Listen, she got sentenced to 10 years. This man was in his 20s. His life ended, okay? He didn't get to live he's not going to get to live his life. His family is devastated. His family has lost him forever. Not for the next few years while she's in jail. So the man's 26 years old. Think back, if you're older, if you're my age, if you're in your 50s, think about everything that's happened since you're 26. You know what happened when I was 26? I got sober. So my whole life has changed since then. This has all been taken away from this man. She got 10 years and a hug from the judge. I don't understand that at all. That is not good. I'm going to say that is not good. And in an interesting parallel, would parallel be the right word? I don't know. Development. Well, there's been a couple of interesting developments after this, but for this one, Kalontre Bearfield's 23 years old, and he was arrested for burglary and robbery in Ohio. He shot the police dog chasing him. He killed a police dog named Jethro, which is terrible. Okay, now don't get me wrong. That's terrible. He received a 45-year sentence, 34 years for shooting the police dog, 11 years for his additional crimes, robbery and burglary. 34 years for killing a police dog. Now listen, killing a police dog is wrong. Killing a police dog is horrible. But isn't it? Okay, do black lives matter? Well, a white police officer shot a black man and was sentenced to 10 years with a hug. A black man shot a police dog and got 34 years. Kind of tells you something about what life is worth. Another strange thing with this Amber Geiger case, Joshua Brown, who testified in the case, he lived across the hall. If you watched any of it, you saw it. He got emotional in the testimony after hearing the gunshots, seeing Amber in the hallway, you know, distraught, blah, blah, blah. You know, his testimony mattered. And he broke down giving his testimony. He's been shot and killed just after the sentencing. Now, there's no obvious connection between the two. It said that he was shot at before. There was a fight at a party at a club. Someone shot at him. They said maybe that shooter came back to finish the job. I don't know. But it's just weird, right? Just enough, man. This is 28 years old. Enough young black men dying. It's young men dying. But yeah, young black men dying. And don't come with these guys were bangers and all that, because they weren't. This guy graduated from South Florida State College, managed some Airbnb units. You know, he's trying to build a life, you know. Yeah, Botham Jean was smoking weed. Oh, my God, he smoked weed in his house. You know, they show that. They always try to show these victims, black victims of crime, to show them as criminals to somehow make it okay. It's just strange, this guy Joshua Brown getting killed. Tragic, and just another waste of life. I was on jury duty for a couple of days last week. Yeah, I showed up for jury duty. Let me tell you, they get serious. When they sent the letter that said you can either be a defendant or a juror, I figured they meant it, so I showed up. It was a guy being charged with murder, and he was a gangbanger and the whole bit, and it's sad, you know. I don't know if he did it or not. It was just weird. It's kind of hard to explain, but being a black man, seeing a young black man on trial for murder, it's kind of like, man, you hate to see another young black man go to jail. But if he's a murderer, then he should be in prison. You know, it's not like I'm giving a pass to bad people. Oh, this guy had a bad lawyer. His lawyer was horrible. So I don't know how it turned out, but I was sitting there thinking this don't look good. And I wasn't going to be picked for that jury, because the last thing we're going to pick is another black man for this jury. But so I don't know. This getting back, sorry, I was getting off topic. This Joshua Brown thing, I don't know. It'll play out. The police said that they don't have any suspects yet. They're doing an investigation. A lot of people, you know, let's say some eyebrows have been raised. They're looking for an independent investigation. And yeah, we'll see how this turns out. I still think 10 years was way too light a sentence for her. Okay, again, moving on, shifting gears. California, and this is great. So California has passed a law, and unfortunately it doesn't take effect till 2023. I don't know why I have to wait 3 more years for this to happen. But college athletes in California will be allowed to make money off of their name. They can sell their name and their likeness, etc. Now, the NCAA, of course, is pissed, because the NCAA has been making money off of their names and not paying them a dime. One of my South Park, extreme satire and beautiful satire, once had Cartman go to a college president and say, "So how do you keep your slaves in line?" And what slaves? "Oh, you know, the athletes that they play and they do all the work and you make millions of dollars. You know, your slaves." Yeah, and I've joked about that too. I joked about it. You know, it's very interesting. College sports, very interesting. Seems to be a lot of young black men working for a lot of old white men making money. Just saying. Just saying. So anyway, California's passed this law that you can make money off your likeness. Now, if you follow sports or you follow any of this, you know there was a big lawsuit by a basketball player named Ed O'Bannon, superstar in the 90s in college basketball, played for UNLV, suing the NCAA, saying that they sell names and likenesses of their athletes to sports video games, and the athletes don't get paid even after college is out. Like, NCAA said, "Well, while you're in college, we own your name." And his point was, "Well, I've been out of college for 10, 15 years. You're still selling the game and I'm not getting paid." He won that lawsuit. That lawsuit's in appeal. The NCAA's threat to California is, if you go through with this, we will ban California athletes from NCAA competitions, claiming that it's unfair and advantage to California schools. In other words, you're a great high school basketball player in Kansas. It's like, well, where you want to play? Well, if you play in California, you can make money off your name. So the NCAA is trying that. Here's the problem with that. There are 13 other states that have similar laws coming up, similar bills being passed. The NCAA model is old. It's a ripoff. It doesn't work. Besides that, and I'm just, as I see these stories, I continue to learn. I did not know this. A college tennis player can make up to $10,000 a year playing tennis. If you're in an Olympic sport, you can keep the money made from your Olympic performance and still play in college athletics. So this is only aimed at football and basketball players, which NCAA football, NCAA basketball is the minor leagues for the NBA and the NFL. Everyone knows that. Let the kids make money. Let's figure it out. Instead of saying no, let's figure it out. Tim Asshole Tebow spoke out against it. Fuck off, Tebow. Okay, if you don't want to make money, don't. You shut up. These kids get in trouble. Why is it that if you're in a band, okay, if you're in the band playing at the game, you can be in a professional band and keep your scholarship. You can play in a band on weekends. You could play, I don't know, weddings or something like that. You can get paid. So the trombone player can make more money than the star running back. Because if the star running back gets a free lunch or gets a bag of groceries from the wrong person, he loses his college scholarship and eligibility. What? Yeah, that's how the system is set up. And make no mistake, this is a multi-billion dollar industry, okay? The NCAA basketball tournament, March Madness, which we all love, CBS pays $1 billion for those rights. The bowl games, you know, the Rose Bowl, each school gets $15 million just for going. That's not counting the NCAA money, the television revenue. That's just for going to the game. You get $15 million. Then you have the sneaker contracts where the coaches get paid by Nike and Adidas and Under Armour and whoever else. The coach gets that money and the kids get nothing. Aaron Pryor was I believe that's his name. I may be getting it wrong. But anyway, he was a quarterback at Ohio State and he traded a jersey for a tattoo. And he got in trouble for it in his pro career. They suspended him. That's how far the NCAA's reach was. By the way, his jersey was for sale in the school bookstore. So the school could make money off it. The NCAA could make money off it. But he traded his jersey for a tattoo and got in trouble. Which, I also wonder, how do these kids afford sleeves? Good tattoo artists are not cheap. Some of these kids have full sleeves. By the way, I love tattoos. Don't get a full sleeve at 19. Something else in your life's going to happen that you're going to want to ink into your life. Leave some space. Just giving advice to the kids. This is great. California's leading the way. I hope these other states pass the rule. I hope the NCAA is pushed out of college basketball and college football. Okay, NCAA can run the lesser sports. And yes, they are lesser sports. And don't get all upset if you played college lacrosse or water polo because your team did not bring in the revenue of a Division I college basketball or football team, okay? There's no team at Michigan that's bringing in as much money as basketball and football or USC or even Duke or Miami, even rich schools like Duke or Miami. Trust me, the teams are bringing in more money, so let's separate college basketball and football and stop pretending that it's amateur and figure out a way to fairly get these players paid and guarantee their scholarships. This is another thing. Their scholarship is not guaranteed. Their scholarship's renewed each year. That is bullshit. The minute you start playing, if you play one season, you deserve four-year education. One and done, they still deserve to come back at any point in their life and get an education. Why? Because how much money did the school make? You take a Zion Williamson, Marvin Bagley Jr., who played for Duke. Yeah, they only played one season. How much money did Duke make because of Zion Williamson being there? He gets 4 years of college free at any point in his life. Okay? This is the way it should be done. Let's bring some fairness to college athletics. And finally, speaking of rich people, and I'm not anti-rich people, by the way. I like rich people. Happen to know some. I'm not one of them. Rich asshole syndrome. It's a thing. There's a book, Civilized to Death, The Price of Progress, written by a man named Christopher Ryan, and I'm reading this article about this book, and it's in Wired magazine. You can find it, just look it up. So it talks about why are rich people mean? Rich people are mean, not all rich people, but a hell of a lot of rich people. I would even say the majority of rich people are just mean people. Now it starts out, the author talks about being in that situation. He's in India, right? Where if you've ever seen third world poverty, it's really unbelievable. It's beyond anything, almost anything you'll see in the United States. And he talks about like being in a restaurant and there are literally starving kids standing outside the restaurant watching him eat and stepping over people on the streets who may be sleeping, who may be dead. And he said even when he bought food and gave it to some, that only attracted more. These kids, I mean, it's horrible, right? So if you're first world, you look rich. But he's not just talking about that. He's talking about some of these highly successful people. For example, a guy named Hal Steger in Silicon Valley. Net worth $3.5 million. He says if Steger and his wife were positioned to cash out investor capital, they could glide through the rest of their life on a passive income of about $175,000 a year at a 5% rate of return, which isn't huge. They could just get $175,000 a year, live out their retirement. Okay. He's 51 years old. This is his life. Most mornings he's at his desk by 7 a.m., works 12 hours a day, does an extra 10 hours over the weekend. And they said, why do you work so hard? He said, a few million doesn't go as far as it used to. Okay. So he's what they call a working class millionaire. Another guy, Gary Creeman, you've heard of him. You haven't? Yes, you have. He founded Match.com. This guy's worth $10 million. And he says, everyone around here looks at the people above them. You're nobody around here if with $10 million. And the author writes, if you're nobody with $10 million, what does it cost to be somebody? So what he talks about is like never getting enough, never having enough. But it's not just that. He calls it rich asshole syndrome, the cold-heartedness associated with the upper crust. Now, we see it. I hate to bring him up again, but Trump is an example of it. Rich people with seemingly no empathy. And he points out things like even at a four-way stop sign, the person in the most expensive car is likely to be the one to cut somebody off. Rich kids, they did a study that they gave these kids tokens and the tokens could be given to help others. The richest kids gave out the fewest tokens. He also talks about that what we do with our money is we isolate ourselves. Now, let me tell you, because I get this all the time. People say, well, Alonzo, you're rich. I'm not rich. I am doing well. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't worry about paying the rent. A lot of people do. I'm fortunate. I don't worry about paying the rent. I make enough money to have, you know, my car and motorcycle, little toys and stuff like that, you know. So I'm not sitting here telling you I'm struggling. I do all right, but I'm not rich. I'm certainly not worth $10 million. I'm not worth $3.5 million. Some people say I ain't worth a dime. Sorry about that. But anyway, so I'm not this. But this is what they say people do with money, that they isolate themselves, right? So you move, for example, you move from coach on the airplane to first class on the airplane to a private jet. You move from an apartment to a house behind a wall. And we've seen this. This is what's considered success, by the way. Well, what this man is saying is that we use money to insulate ourselves from the risk, noise, and inconvenience, but the insulation comes at the price of isolation. Our comfort requires, and I'm reading from the article, our comfort requires that we cut ourselves off from chance encounters, new music, unfamiliar laughter, fresh air, random interaction with strangers. Researchers have concluded again and again, this is from the article, The single most reliable predictor of happiness is feeling embedded in a community. That surprised me. I didn't know that that was true, but I can believe it. He said in the 1920s, about 5% of Americans lived alone. Today, more than a quarter do, more than 25%. And it's the highest level ever. Now, I'm going to talk about me personally with this because I do live alone. And I wouldn't say my house is isolated, but it's quiet. I'm like, I guess it's considered the suburbs of LA. It's not suburbia like, model house 1, 2, and 3 suburbia. I did that. Ooh, that was a horrible mistake. Ooh, did I lose money on that? We'll talk one day about buy high, sell low. Alonzo's School of Real Estate. Buy in 06, sell in 09, and lose all the money you won on Last Comic Standing. Because I'm a genius. Anyway, but I am a member of communities. I'm a member of the comedy community. I love comics. Comics love other comics because when we talk and we laugh, there are no rules. If you want an idea of what it's like, check out Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Seinfeld and Eddie Murphy. They talk about it, how much comics love being around other comics because we can joke about and talk about anything. I'm also in the recovery community, and that one's big. That the recovery community, sobriety. One of the things that he talked about in this article, one of the things that makes people happy, is very interesting. Doing something for other people activates the same part of the brain as food and sex. That's how good it feels to do something for other people. Well, in the recovery community, that's the core of the community, right? One addict helping another, one alcoholic helping another, because we have an understanding of each other that other people don't have. And my comparison for it is pregnancy, right? A woman who's been pregnant and has a baby can talk to another woman who's been pregnant and have a baby and understand in a way that a woman who hasn't been pregnant or a man would never understand, which is why I think only women should be allowed to talk about the abortion debate. Off topic. Sorry. Got to put it in there. This is interesting about rich people being assholes because we're seeing it here in the United States. Sadly, and another article I read talked about 40 years of the trickle-down theory not working because it simply doesn't. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer, the middle is falling off. There is no, the middle class is being destroyed. So you see it over and over, rich people becoming more and more heartless. The immigration debate is a perfect example of people being heartless. People whose grandfathers and grandmothers came to this country with nothing are now saying you can't come to this country with nothing. They brag about we came here with nothing and we built blah, blah, blah. And yet now Latino immigrants are coming in with no, you can't come in unless you have money and speak English, right? People are becoming more and more heartless toward other people. Social programs from the government are the first things cut. They're called entitlement programs. Oh, how dare they come here and get sick? You know, that I think that the Statue of Liberty said we wanted them. You know, you're sick, you're poor, you're tired, you're hungry, blah, blah, blah. So I think rich asshole syndrome is real. I see it. You know, it's funny. Now, I'm a car guy, so it's kind of weird, but I'm telling you, I see it over and over in LA. The more expensive the car, the worse it's being driven. And certain cars just seem more assholish. Teslas. I'm sorry, Tesla owners, but I see a lot of Teslas driven in an asshole manner, and I don't know what that's about. I think it has to do with they have so much power and the car has so much power and it's silent and, you know, I'm on a technological edge or so. I don't know what it is, but I see that. Hell, I saw a Rolls Royce cutting off people today. But if you get hit by a Rolls Royce, assuming you don't get injured too bad, God forbid you get killed, just get hit by a Rolls Royce. That could prove to be a good day. I'm just saying, a lot of daytime lawyers out there, get yourself one. This is very interesting to me. Michael Lewis, who, you know, has written much about the privilege and money and so on, said the problem is caused by the inequality itself. It triggers a chemical reaction in the privileged few. It tilts their brains. I don't know if that's true, but I do know we all see so many rich people that are just mean. And then other things that were just kind of weird, you know, just you wouldn't think, but yeah. There was a study done by a psychologist named Dasher Kettner and Paul Piff, and they found interesting things, okay? When researchers posed as pedestrians waiting across the street, all the drivers in cheap cars respected their right of way. Those in expensive cars drove right on by 46% of the time. Wealthier subjects were more likely to claim they'd won a computer game, even though the game was rigged so that winning was impossible. Wealthy subjects more likely to lie in negotiations and excuse unethical behavior at work, like lying to clients to make more money. When they left a jar of candy at the entrance to their lab with a sign saying whatever would be left over would be given to kids at a nearby school, they found wealthier people stole more of the candy. Yeah, that's a weird thing, right? And they're not saying that all rich people are assholes, but they're saying that there's a lot of rich people who are assholes. If you have $10 million, you won. That's the thing. How much is enough? You know, the Walton family is the ultimate example of this. The Walton family, as a family, is the richest family in the United States, I believe. Not richest individual, richest family. Each one of them is worth over $10 billion. I think over $15 billion. When I read about it, they were each worth over $15 billion. Now, think about this. We've all heard the stories about Walmart. They're making the employees part-time so that they don't get health insurance. Employees paid so little that they qualify for food stamps, which actually means that the government is subsidizing Walmart. And all these horrible stories about Walmart employees, right? If each family member gave up $1 billion, they would never know. You can't tell me there's a difference in lifestyle between having $14 billion and $15 billion. I don't think anyone with $14 billion is like, man, if I could just make another billion, I could live. Imagine if each one of them gave up $1 billion, how great would it be to work at Walmart? You could have a living wage. You could have health insurance, maybe an education program, pay for some college or something like that. You know, there's so many. There's the billionaire who went to Morehouse and paid off all the student loans just for the graduating class, just paid off all of their student loans. You can do so much with this money. You can never spend all of it. You know, guys like Gates, who just gives away tons and tons and tons of money. Because you can't use it all, you know. And I'm not saying you have to. And I'm not even necessarily saying that I agree that there should be a form of wealth distribution other than, yeah, you should be taxed more. You should be taxed more if you're super rich. You know why? Because you can't afford it. And also because you do profit from society, okay? Warren Buffett, who plans to give away his money when he dies, he's leaving a small portion to his family, the rest he plans to give away. But he called him out. He said, you know, if you run a business like Walmart, you do owe money because it's public roads that get people to your store. It's public buses that get people to. So, yeah, you do have a debt to society. Also, again, it makes you feel good. I've been fortunate enough to be part of some charitable organizations. I have a charity called Shoes That Fit that I absolutely love. I'm a sneakerhead, as many of you know. I love buying different Nikes. Shoes That Fit buy sneakers for kids. So I give them money because I'm lucky enough to buy sneakers for me. Do you know how? I cannot tell you how much fun and how good it felt to be with James Worthy, retired superstar from the Lakers. We went to a school with Shoes That Fit, and we gave away sneakers to kids. And some of the kids, they weren't all poor kids. It wasn't like they were walking around barefoot. But some of the kids, they did. I mean, you see their faces light up when they get a new pair of sneakers, a free pair of sneakers. The idea came because there were some kids that didn't have shoes. But even that kids get bullied, kids get picked on because they had old shoes, ripped up shoes. So the woman who started this charity said every kid should have a nice pair of sneakers when they go to school. And Nordstrom is kicking in and helping. But that's not the point. The point is the feeling. You've done it, I hope. You've done something charitable, whether, you know, I've done the soup kitchen thing at Thanksgiving, any of those things. I'm love being part of the Laugh Factory charitable Thanksgiving and Christmas shows. You feel better when you give, you know. So, but this rich asshole thing, I just don't get it. If you're rich, good for you. No one's saying you're a bad person, but why be mean? Why do we have the Trumps? And people aspire to be that. They aspire to be a rich piece of shit. That's fascinating. Thankfully, yeah, it is good that researchers are studying this and writing books about it, because maybe we can learn and maybe we can do better. You know, and Michael Lewis wrote an essay, "Extreme Wealth is Bad for Everyone, Especially the Wealthy." Diminished empathy, social isolation, etc., etc. You know, we could do better. What am I turning into Bill Maher? I don't know. But at the end, I'm going to wrap this podcast up by saying that this is a thing I think that many conservatives and so on don't understand about liberals. And I'm going to speak for myself, but I know I speak for many liberal people. The reason we're upset with the status quo is because we know we can do better. I love the United States of America, and I know we as a nation can do better than Donald Trump. I know we can do better with immigrants than putting kids in cages. I know we can do better with women who desire an abortion than making it illegal and having them forced in these southern states to go to one place and they have to walk through a gauntlet of hate to get to a medical procedure that they have a right to choose. I know that we can figure out a way to educate our populace, to spend money, we can do better than Betsy DeVos. See, that's the dissatisfaction that liberals have, and even more so amongst progressives who want to blow up the system. That's the dissatisfaction. We can do better. You can do better. You are doing better. Thank you. Thank you for listening. This is Who's Paying Attention. It's my podcast. I love doing this. And I do truly appreciate. There are people who listen. You guys hit me up online and come to my live shows. Speaking of which, I will be at Denver this weekend, the 11th to the 14th. I love the Denver Improv. It's a great city. Breathe deep. It's Denver. Go for a run. Better yet, don't. Oxygen's hard to find. I love that city. I'm going to be there this weekend. I will see you there. At the end of the month, I'm starting the Family Feud Live tour again. Please, just go to familyfeudlive.com, go to my website, go to my Instagram, ZoFunny. You'll see posts about it, where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing. We're going to be up in the Northeast. If you can come to a live Family Feud show, they're a lot of fun. They're very funny. So come on down. Oh, did I mention we give away money? Yeah, we give away money. I love you guys for listening. We'll see how all of this plays out. Give yourself a break from the news. Don't let it drive you too crazy. Pay attention to what's going on, but don't run your blood pressure up too high. Thank you. Who's paying attention? You are, and I really appreciate it.